Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, October 28th, 2015. And with me today, Kelly Gaumont. How's it going, Kelly?
It's going well, Jeff. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Dare I say A-okay.
Ooh.
Yeah. Also, John Bartolaro, I hope you're doing well.
10-4, roger that. Copy, A-okay too.
Roger, roger.
Breaker, 1-9.
Yeah. Well, hopefully so today we're start just, listening again tomorrow.
We're just exclusively referring to John today as Eastbound and Down, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we are. Okay. Yesterday we had the earnings report from Apple.
We did. It was so sad.
My favorite point in the quarter earnings report was when Tim Cook says, "So we're doing pretty well."
I loved that.
That was absolutely awesome. All right, so this was fourth quarter for 2015.
Because they're not on the calendar year, so people need to keep that in mind. So when we get the Christmas earning, the report that includes the Christmas quarter, that's going to be the first quarter of next year for them, the way that their schedule is set up.
Right. So this is typically referred to as the September quarter because this was the quarter that ended in September. So their fiscal fourth quarter of the year. Mm-hmm. And we are now currently in the first fiscal quarter of 2016.
Yes.
Right.
New math hurts my head. Okay.
Yeah. So anyhow, fiscal years are weird.
Yeah. But hey, you know, they're set up so that they best benefit the companies, which,
yes.
I mean, hey, you know, it makes sense. You can do it. So, of course you do. All right. So what Apple reported was $51.5 billion
in
quarterly revenue with a B.
When you say this, you have to put your pinky to the corner of your mouth.
And 230-some billion for the entire year, fiscal year. Amazing. Yes.
See, those are the numbers to me that are always interesting. That's one of the things that I really enjoy about this call that we get in October is the full year numbers. Because remember, their year started with this quarter last year. So from Christmas quarter until just a smidge of new iPhone magic this year is what we're talking about. So I always find the full year numbers interesting. Like I'm always a little curious about what the numbers are for this last quarter, but the stuff I like is the year over year and the full year or year to date, depending on the quarter that we're in. And that stuff to me is always the stuff that I think is the most impressive. Individual quarter numbers, especially when they're crazy quarters, that's always fun to watch, but to see how they've continued to just wipe the floor with everything else to me is really outstanding.
It's pretty impressive to look at their numbers. It is to the point where hearing Apple say record-breaking quarter is almost boring because it's every single quarter.
It's expected.
Breaks more records. Yeah.
And that has the analysts in a funk because they would keep wondering, how long can Apple keep this up?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we'll see.
And then every time it comes around, they go, well, they couldn't possibly do all that well this quarter too. And then people go, listen to analysts and go, gosh, they must be right. And then the stock starts to dip a little bit. And then they come out and they're like, yeah, we're pretty darned awesome. And then and then rinse, repeat. They just keep doing it.
Yeah, there you go.
And Apple hasn't even made a car yet.
No, they haven't. But when that happens, I'm expecting we'll see some crazy stuff with their numbers. I'm curious to see what happens with iPad Pro sales. The iPad Pro goes on sale in November, which November's only a couple days away now, but that doesn't mean the iPad Pro will be available in a couple days. But sometime in November. Mm-hmm. So we'll have a new class of iPad available in time for the holiday buying season. So it'll be interesting to see what kinds of iPad numbers we see when Apple reports their first fiscal quarter for 2016.
I have a theory on that.
Do tell, John.
I'm predicting that the iPad Pro will reverse the downward trend and bring it up a little bit. So it'll take it up above 10 million iPads. I'm thinking about 10 to 15% increase in iPad sales for the first quarter. It's not going to totally reverse the trend, but it's going to stem the tide just enough to offset the losses.
Well, seeing some sort of reversal with iPad sales figures for analysts would be a good thing. I mean, it's not like iPad sales have tanked. Apple is selling a buttload of iPads.
They have tanked.
But they haven't.
They dropped below 10 million sales this
quarter. But listen to yourself for just a minute. Take any other company besides Apple and put it in the following sentence.
You're thinking
dollar sign company has only sold 10 million in the last 3 months.
You're holding it wrong, Kelly. Apple competes with itself. And if a product is not doing well in Apple's sphere, then something has to happen.
But I don't
Tim Cook walks into a meeting and says to the sales VPs, what are you doing?
Thank you for saving me from that edit.
Ooh la la.
And there's going to be pain inside Apple because of this declining number.
But see, I'm
thinking that Apple needs to start asking itself, what do we need to do? What's the future? You know, several products have started off on the wrong foot. You know, like the Newton and the original Mac without a hard drive. You know, and the technology evolves, and people finally come around to the idea this is what's going to have to happen because the iPad's a product for the future. I mean, you know, I've got a picture I love to use in my articles. I'm going to use it again with Geordie LaForge talking to Zefram Cochran, and he's holding a little iPad in his hand. They're looking at warp core calculations. The iPad is a product for the future. It's forever. I mean, it's just a question of how it evolves. And right now, it's stumbling a little bit because maybe the technology gate is not open yet, and we have to hit some critical point where, you know, something new is enabled and it can start flourishing again.
John, I'm going to ding you once for being wrong, and I'm going to ding you twice for being still wrong. Here's why.
Do tell, Kelly.
Because, so a lot of people, and this was one of the things that we heard a lot about yesterday in the earnings call, was a lot of people like to upgrade their phones yearly. The phone is continuing to evolve and change as new ideas come to the fore, as Apple gets a good idea how people use their devices and what sort of stuff they could really do to push that envelope. Now, with the iPad is sort of this middle ground, and I'm going to use myself as an example because I'm the foremost expert on me. The iPad is the middle ground between the phone in my pocket all the time and my computer. And the iPad has made it more of an event for me to go to my computer to do whatever it is I need to do. Because my first thought is, well, if I can't do it on my phone, can I do it on my iPad? Yeah, as a matter of fact, I can do it on my iPad. Okay, now I'm not worried about it. So I think that the iPad is just has sort of found its groove. And its groove is not every year. It is not Pokemon. The iPad is not Pokemon. You don't got to catch them all. You maybe can skip a couple or skip three.
The reason it's not every year, Kelly, is because the technology is not evolving as sufficiently fast as it should.
But see, I totally disagree because I think that having the iPad out there the way that it is in what feels like because it's not happening every year, twice a year, anything like that. Like they're not headed to a Samsung release schedule with the iPad. Is that if you're really, really quiet, you can hear Samsung release something new right now. because they're not going to that schedule, it feels to me as though for a lot of people, the iPad has become that middle ground. And remember the huge question, I think it was at last year's, and you guys may have to check my math on this. I think it was at this year ago quarter when we got the earnings call. Was one of the things that was interesting was all of the people freaking out over the iPad cannibalizing computer sales. So if people are treating the iPad like it's most of a computer, computers don't get upgraded every year either. People who are treating this like it is their primary computing device, and I know a number of these people, some of them are in my family, they are people who regularly call me for assistance. People for whom the iPad is a computer don't need a new one every year. they buy one every few, or when it turns out that the thing that they use all the time is only on the new OS and the new version of OS doesn't run on the iPad 2, for example, then those people start looking at upgrading. They don't necessarily do it on purpose. And if you're talking about people, it's people who are maybe headed for this. And a lot of people will put a lot more of that attention onto their phone, which is why we're seeing a lot of this stuff start on the phone, and then it becomes something that shows up on the iPad. I absolutely believe this to be true. It's following a PC upgrade schedule. That's why they're not buying them.
You're right up to a point. You're right in that people are jazzed about having a new phone every year because it's so personal and so mobile, and the technology is rapidly changing on the smartphone front. You're right that an iPad that's several years old is still doing the job. But the problem is that because the graphics capability of the iPad has increased so much, it has completely left iOS in the dust. The technology should evolve more quickly. And because Apple has kept the iOS 9 to be very close to what's on the phone, the iPad hasn't been left to its own devices to evolve. The graphics chip in the iPad Air 2 is 300 and sometimes faster than the original iPad, but you wouldn't know it because you've still got this stupid home display of icons that you touch, and you treat your giant iPad like an old-fashioned device from 2010. It hasn't really flourished in its capabilities. It's the iOS 9 has kept it held back, in my view. In terms of the user interface.
But keep in mind that we're only seeing this on the hardware that is now a year old. The Air 2 came out last fall. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing the current OS on what is essentially the previous gen's hardware. So I don't know how much we can really say about that until we actually... Well, I'm not going to get one. But until you and Jeff actually get the iPad Pro... and get your paws on it. I think at that point, we're going to have a much different conversation.
This is a evolutionary product, the iPad Pro. This is the start of the beginning of the new iPad in the future. And I think Apple is going to be pleased with the sales, and the result is going to be a continued emphasis on exploiting the hardware, the iPad, to set it apart from the phone instead of just being a giant phone.
So I'm going to make a prediction here because... Okay. I'm gonna go out and stand by it. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and that's fine. But I think people who have a certain amount of technological awareness and are buying Christmas gifts are gonna look at the kind of power that's in the new Mini. Because the new Mini is iPad Air 2, current as of today, iPad, big size iPad, insides. And then they washed it in hot and dried it on high, and now it's this itty-bitty little device that has all the same power and processing and graphics go of the iPad Air 2. Mm-hmm. It's just littler. So I think that's going to end up being the, if you can get your hands on them, it's going to be the bananas blow-up Christmas gift. It's going to be the Tickle Me Elmo of this Christmas. Because once people realize how much power is in that little thing that will fit in those giant pants' pockets, I think at that point, maybe people will start having a different conversation about mobile computing that is not just your phone.
I agree. This is all part of Apple's program. You know, there's the partnership with IBM. There's the mobile apps initiative. There's the iPad Pro. There's the Apple Pay and Touch ID. There is a slide over and split view. You can see Apple's nibbling around the edges of the technology, looking for the magic concoction that's going to breathe new life into this machine. And if anybody can find it, Apple can.
Now, John, you said something that I've been wondering if we'd have time to get to today. So I'm going to make sure we do right now. You said partnership with IBM. And you wrote a piece yesterday about Apple's stealth business, the enterprise business that they have been growing very quietly and stealth, and that's up to $25 billion for them.
It's interesting how Apple went about this. I concluded the article with a sort of a recollection of 15 years ago when I first went to work for Apple in 2000, it was the PC wars. It was, you know, Apple Macintosh versus the PC, and Apple was getting beaten soundly. And that's the only weapon Apple had, because Microsoft pushed all the corporate buttons and had all this Office software and was the darling of the business world. But when you look how Apple has approached its business, it all started with a halo effect. It all started with bring your own device. It started with insinuating yourself into the technology life of everyday people that was so cool and so compelling that it just had to make its appearance in the workplace. And before, when IT managers ruled the roost with an iron hand and you couldn't bring anything else in unless it was stamped with approval, now people are saying, "No, I'm going to conduct my business with the iPhone. You better support me." And then you have the partnership with IBM. You have that agreement with Cisco. You have the improvements in iOS in every version, as Tim Cook mentioned yesterday, to support enterprise security and connections and so on, to comply with the standards and needs of the enterprise. Apple has this multi-pronged approach, as only a giant company that it is now can do. And so the concept of trying to sell PCs into a PC business place on the desktop has been supplanted with this multifaceted technology approach of iPads and iPhones and some really cool MacBooks and security of OS X. That's kind of been a broad spectrum attack on the enterprise market, and it's succeeded very well.
Now, do you think Apple's going to be able to keep that momentum and that their enterprise business will continue to grow? And I'm kind of leading you into answers.
Well, the short answer is, if Steve Ballmer had been still the CEO, I would say yes. But with Satya Nadella now at the helm, I would say it's iffy.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting to see what's happening with Microsoft right now.
Yeah, Microsoft is all of a sudden, out of the blue, a smart, attentive, shrewd, capable company that's just sort of burst forth on the scene. And so Apple will have its work cut out for it.
So I have a question for both of you right now.
Okay.
Yesterday on the call, when Tim Cook said, "Inside IBM, Macs are gaining traction," did both of you feel for just a second like you had fallen into a parallel universe?
A little bit.
Because I had a total bizarro moment. Like, is Tim wearing a goatee right now that I just can't see? Like, am I in an alternate universe where opposite things are true?
He's saying things that 10 years ago I never would have expected anyone
He's
at,
saying
at
things
Apple to say.
5 years ago I never would have thought I would have heard.
Well, what he didn't say was that IBM has agreed to buy 50,000 more Macs just by the end of 2015. And I think there's more coming in 16.
So here's a question I have for both of you, because this is something that I've sort of wondered about and am starting to actually want to ask and get to the bottom of. So I used to be in corporate IT. And when I was in corporate IT, there were Apple reps that they sent to come meet with us periodically about what we were doing and how things were working.
I was one of those.
And when I was on the receiving end of that, we would say things to them, and, you know, regardless of how it went, here was basically the conversation we ended up having with them, you know, periodically. So we're trying to plan our budget spending for the next year, and we're looking at our Mac purchases. And the Apple rep says, "That's cute." Mm-hmm. There's nothing they can tell us. They can't say, you know, I mean, even if you're in really good with them, you generally can't get them to go, "Yeah, I don't know if I'd buy a ton of Apple TVs this week." You know, you can't. It just doesn't, you know, like, if you go to them and you're like, "I need to order a ridiculous number of iPhones," and it's like the first week of September, they're going to be like, "Okay." Like, there's usually not much they can do to help influence that. And what I wonder is, and this was the thing that fascinated me yesterday about hearing that all of a sudden they have this monster enterprise business, is how enterprise, which is a long-term, forward-thinking, generally slower-moving sort of situation, as a person who's been in enterprise IT, I can tell you that's generally how it works. Mm-hmm. you know, they're not beta testers. They're not the first people, and they're not the first to jump into the pool, you know? Those folks and how they're like, we have a need for a long-term plan bumps up against Apple's doubling down on secrecy. Like, this is the thing I'm sort of wondering, is how these two manage to coexist at all, let alone to the tune of $25 billion.
Well, it's kind of a reverse halo effect. You're right. As I said at the beginning, when you fight the PC war with Apple's tendency towards security and surprise, you can't fight that war.
Right.
But if you can develop technologies in a broad spectrum way that I just described, then you can insinuate yourself into the corporation. And then all of a sudden, this corporation that's full of iPads and full of iPhones is suddenly thinking, you know, these MacBooks are awfully good, and they run Windows with a virtual machine software like Parallels Desktop or VMware Fusion. So, or you can run Linux on these machines. It's the only platform where you can run all the major operating systems on a really good piece of hardware with an SSD inside. So it's just the perfect solution, and it's pretty secure by all standards. So, you know, that technology infusion in IBM has resulted in this sort of opening their eyes about the virtues of MacBooks and Macs. And that's been a pretty nice strategy, and it solved the PC war problem nice.
But how does that, again, that doesn't change, though, that, like, if I want to go buy a ridiculous number of MacBooks right now, and Apple has some set to come out on November 1st, if I go place that order today, like, I mean, there's a very good chance that I could get what would be considered in corporate and IT stuck with the previous model, even though there's new ones coming.
Yeah, but is it really that big a deal? I mean, you know, you phase them in, and you retire the old ones and you phase in the new ones, and some people get the latest and some people get the next to the latest. You know, is it really that big a deal?
I think in some cases it could be, and that's the thing that I'm very curious about. If I'm looking to maximize my investment, I want to buy the latest and greatest, and if I need to wait a month so that I can get a whole other year out of that device.
Think about it. What differentiates the MacBook from the MacBook Air? I mean, the change in the port structure and the 3D touch. Well, you yourself are investigating the 3D touch thing and the force touch and finding out that we don't have a gazillion developers on that bandwagon yet. And so, you know, if you can't even properly exploit all the features of the latest MacBook in terms of the force touch, 3D touch, what's the big deal? I mean, you know, slide through the technology timeline.
The big deal is 6 months from now, when everybody does jump on to the Force Touch, and I have a bunch of computers that don't have it. That's what I'm worried about, is that those sorts of lines are always drawn within MacBooks and things.
Small companies have financial constraints and restrictions, and it's up to individuals and budgets. But a big company can work contracts with Apple, and you can recycle machines. You can sell them out. You can upgrade them. You can have it in the contract where you can, you know, move on to the next generation and seamlessly, and, you know, it all works out. I don't think it's a big deal anymore.
All right. I have to cut us off because we're over time. And
welcome to Apple Context Machine.
Yeah.
This was fun, Kelly.
It's funny how sometimes the conversation I plan for us is not the one we end up having.
We're having the opposite of that almost. Yeah.
Because this is great. So we haven't resolved to
anything.
Kelly's satisfaction. Anything. And that's okay, because that means now we can work through more of this in future shows, and it'll be like therapy. So it'll be great. and listeners, you can help support us by making your Apple purchases through our special link. So if you go to macobserver.com/Apple Store, what that does is it gives you a link where you can get back to Apple and then make your purchases, and then we get a little kickback from that. And the money that we get from those purchases you make, say an Apple TV right now, and next month an iPad Pro, some of that money is going to come back to us, and then we use it to make sure that our podcasts stay online, that we have our servers up and running, and that we're getting the content to you that we love creating, and it seems like you enjoy consuming. So check that out, macobserver.com/ Apple Store. And Kelly, thank you for being here today.
Of course. It was my pleasure.
And John, thank you for being here too.
Roger, okay. Spock out.
And listeners, thank you for joining us today. We will see everyone again tomorrow.